Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. The rain and fog earlier this week have lifted, but if you enjoyed them, a new mystery by a local author might be just the meteorological ticket. The Summer of Rain, Odyssey of a Young PI, plays out in a fictional Wisconsin town during a profoundly damp summer. The investigator is Bobby Broyles, new to the job, and a man who finds himself wrapped up in a soggy morass of corruption, murder, scandal, and slimy funeral directors. The hard-boiled mystery is the work of the mild-mannered John Kolb of Whitefish Bay, who's previously written plays and short stories. Kolb sat down with Lake Effect's Mitch Teich in the studio and talked about what makes a good mystery for him.
Well, certainly suspense, as the name goes. I also like good dialogue. It's one of my favorite parts of writing as a writer and a reader. And then I like characters that are memorable. So those are some of the ingredients that I was hoping to put into my book.
From what I know about you, and I don't know a ton about you, but I don't believe you were a part of the culture of corruption and crime syndicates and drugs and snitches. what draws you to writing about that world?
I led a pretty sedate life. I went to grade school, was born, and lived within about a two-block area. I guess my first introduction to Milwaukee crime, my parents used to take us to the Shorecrest Hotel for dinner, and they pointed out a telephone on a table, which was Frank Balistrieri's notorious phone that was eventually tapped. So I got some look into that world. But I guess it's more – I like reading books that have strong dialogue, and I like the noir world, both movies and fiction. So that kind of got me interested in trying to mimic some of the better ones.
Who are the detective and mystery writers who have been important to you through the years?
Well, there's a guy that not everybody knows. The late his name was Westlake, but he wrote under the name of Richard Stark. He wrote a series. I like that very much. Recently, a literary fiction writer named Dennis Johnson wrote something called Nobody Move that's really nice. And then movies like Chinatown and the earlier noir ones were all kind of models for me.
I detected kind of a Raymond Chandler quality to this as well.
Well, he certainly everybody owes a debt to him, and I've read some of his and some of the others down to Elmore Leonard. I haven't read all of anybody's.
As I read it, one of the – not to harp on the Raymond Chandler thing, but I remember reading something about the making of The Big Sleep, and by the end, not even the people that were working on that movie knew who had done it and how, and there was certainly something in the really tangled web that we read about in this book that was intriguing.
Well, it was a while before I knew how it was going to end. I kind of dove into it. I had a character, a situation in mind, and I was really sort of desperately searching for how to conclude it. And then when I got the idea, I had to go back and fix some things up to make it a little more plausible.
Well, so let's talk about that. How did this story or where did this story start for you?
Well, years ago, I was in a small writing group, and this is about 20 years ago. The owner of Von Trier's on the east side was assassinated in his parking lot with a crossbow, a very bizarre kind of crime that I don't think was ever solved. So the four of us thought, hey, we should be rich and famous. Let's write a mystery. And I was the only one who did it. So I did that. And then I did a second one about a young detective just starting out in this field. And then I set that aside and a couple years ago totally rewrote that. So that's how I kind of got introduced to the idea of writing crime fiction.
Well, and where did Bobby Broyles come from?
Different places. The fact of having a factory accident and then starting his life over mirrored something that happened at a place where I worked. A young man did get injured, and the company paid for him to go back to school and start his life over. And I kind of like that.
Not necessarily as a detective, though.
No, actually as a computer programmer, which makes it hard to have a central character doing computer programming. But so that was kind of one model. Another thing was in Chinatown – for the second half of the movie, the hero has a bandage over his nose, which is kind of a reminder that he's not in control and the world is dangerous. So the idea of having my hero have a scar, if you will, of the dangerous world came into mind also.
Well, and so what sets this book in motion? Paint a picture of where things are, both for Bobby and what he's setting out to accomplish and solve as the book opens. We don't want to give too much away because part of the fun fun of the book is seeing the twists and turns. But give us what sets the thing in motion.
Well, one thing that I hope is a little different in this book is that Bobby is trying to start over, but he keeps going back to his parents to try and have them bless what he's doing. And they have different ideas of what he should be doing. So his mother has ambitions for him beyond the factory. His father says, why isn't it good enough for you?
But his father was also at the factory.
Correct. He's kind of a minor technical star at the factory. And Bobby's comfortable. But his mother always implies he should do something else. And so Bobby has that in his head. So when that comes together with this accident and some money, that's kind of what turns him to trying something new. And he doesn't have a college education. So this is something he can try out.
How much did you like Bobby when you started putting him on paper?
I actually did like him. I had some feedback in writing groups of this guy is kind of wimpy, and early on he does stumble around. But I kind of wanted him to be like that. I wanted him to not be like Humphrey Bogart, always in kind of command and control, sort of lost. And so I did like him. He's certainly not totally admirable. He hopefully is a mixed person that readers will enjoy following and find interesting. But he has his flaws,
and he's certainly learning the ropes as he goes here.
Absolutely. Stumbling. And when he first got into it, I mean, in the real world, he probably would have spent 10 years staking out motels and nothing. And it's just sort of a fluke that he gets pulled into something that's more substantial than that, namely the disappearance of the wife of a kind of mysterious businessman. Pretty important to have a little more drama than what the average private investigator actually does all the time.
Well, and it's his good fortune that he's been hired, because this is a guy who is perfectly happy to keep paying him to look for his missing wife.
As bad a detective as he is originally, he's still getting paid well and wrestles with some of the dilemmas that involves. He's aware that he's kind of a bought person and doesn't know where he's going, and kind of wonders, why am I getting paid, but I'm glad I am.
And he finds himself in a situation where he's working with a cop who is also kind of new to the scene, or at least new to the city.
Yeah, they kind of pair up. He pairs up with a couple people. He has a lawyer friend who's struggling in his life, but he also has this cop that is new and trying to find his way in a new town. And they're sort of kind of partners and kind of adversaries. So they work together.
Bobby spends a lot of his time getting beaten up.
He does get beaten up often, and he's pretty resilient. He awakes in hospital rooms any number of times, looks around and wonder what's going on, and asks himself, should I keep trying this? And just one other thing that kind of eventually got into my head was to have him at least, while it's, I think, a light, good read, there is this theme of guilt, because as he keeps stumbling around, he keeps endangering people around him. It's almost like a Job as things are crashing around him, and he wrestles with, you know, should I get out of this? I'm hurting other people. That's a theme that runs through it. Not too heavy, I don't think, but it brings a little moral issue to it.
Well, and as you say, you didn't necessarily have a solution in mind when you began. How much fixing did you have to do as you went along to make sure that there weren't all sorts of continuity flaws? This is a really tangled web you have woven.
Yes, it is tangled. And I did, as I say, I did have to go back. And there are certain scenes that absolutely I had to tweak to make it, by the end, the total surprise. I think it's a total surprise. I haven't yet had anybody say I saw that coming.
And there are no butlers in this
No butlers in there, and there's no Mr. Plum or any of that.
There's a reference to Mr. Plum, as I recall.
There is a joking reference to that, yeah. But so I had to go back and try to make it, because as I thought about it, I did wrestle with, is anybody going to believe that this could be it? And I hopefully, by retracing it, I fixed it, I think.
Why did you decide against setting this book in Milwaukee? The actual setting is a bit ambiguous, but it is a small city somewhere in the Midwest.
First of all, I knew if I specifically named a town, I'd have to be really careful, and I like the freedom of not having to do that. If there is a town that, as I thought about it afterwards, my mother grew up in Marinette, Wisconsin, and there was an article in the paper recently about the sudden explosion of the drug trade in Marinette, Wisconsin, and that kind of mirrored what goes on in my story, is that surely as Bobby is having growing pains, the town is having growing pains as suddenly crime is escalating in a once kind of innocent place. So I liked the freedom of not actually naming it, and I could invent stuff that seemed to work for me.
Did you have to do – there are a couple of sidebars or tangents that the book goes into, and one is this world of funeral directors that Bobby finds himself in. How did you immerse yourself in that world?
You've named some of my favorite characters, the funeral directors, and I – apologies to all real funeral directors. I don't really know what you're like, and you're probably not like these people. And so there again, I maybe was freed by ignorance that I could just kind of imagine that maybe some of them have a public persona that isn't exactly the same as what they say behind the scenes. And yet I'm sure I exaggerated. So, I mean, there are probably plenty of people and ethnic groups that get insulted in my book. I really don't mean it.
It is probably not giving anything away to say that Bobby survives this mystery. Is he going to ride again?
First of all, I'd like some overwhelming demands from my fans to do a sequel. It hasn't happened yet. But I have started. I've put about 40, 50 pages down on paper. So I have some thoughts of maybe doing it again. I do allow him to live, yes, so we can go on. If a trilogy is needed, I'm ready.
Well, it seems like just from reading it, you must have had an awfully good time writing it.
It was fun. The dialogue was fun. I loved doing characters and not being under the obligation to have a huge amount of depth to them, painting them in a brush stroke or two, and that's kind of what I enjoyed. And I like the colloquial language too. I like writers who write in that, dramatists or short story writers or whatever.
Did you go out for Latvian food when it was all over?
The names came from a couple guys I knew in high school, but I did not. No, I don't know if there is one in town, in fact. There probably is.
Yeah. Well, John Kolb, it's a fun read. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thanks for having me on and asking some good questions.
You bet.
John Kolb's new book is called The Summer of Rain, Odyssey of a Young PI. It's available at local booksellers and online. There are links from WUWM.com/Lake Effect. Kolb, who lives in Whitefish Bay, spoke with Mitch Tyke. And that is all for the Friday edition of Lake Effect, with thanks to our production team of Mitch Tyke, Stephanie Lecce, and Dan Harmon. We get production assistance from Eleanor Peterson, Brooke Dowden, and Audrey Nowakowski. Web support from Michelle Maternowski, and studio engineering from John Strelecki. And I'm Bonnie North. I hope you have a great weekend. Hope you'll join us tomorrow and Sunday at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend, and be back here again Monday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Fresh air comes your way next. Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock.